The Athletic.
Hi, it's Lindsay Hooper here, host of the Athletic Women's Football Podcast. Are you still buzzing from the Euros this summer? I know I am. Excited to see the players back in action as the WSL season kicks off? Well, make sure you tune into our weekly podcast because we've got you covered every step of the way. We'll have interviews with the top players in the women's game, plus former pros like Kelly Smith and Karen Bardsley, and many more. Just follow or subscribe to the Athletic Women's Football Show wherever you get your podcasts.
So a disappointing result and performance at Villa Park, but the cobwebs well and truly blown away with a 4-0 victory in Sevilla to kick off the Champions League campaign for this season. Plenty to get our teeth stuck into. Welcome to this week's Wire With Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. Sam Lee's here.
Hello.
And so is Paul Byas.
Hello, guys.
Don't forget you can read everything on City and more in The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/mancitypod to sign up. You'll get these podcasts without the ads as well, so you can sign up at theathletic.com/mancitypod. It's a bit of a... Normally we're kind of taking in just the Premier League game and looking ahead to the Champions League game, so it's a bit of an odd one to kind of come into this week, Sam. I wanted to talk about control in City's games. Because I think Tuesday's win over Sevilla is possibly, I mean, Bournemouth aside, but then again, that was Bournemouth, the most in control that City have been in a game this season. Sevilla had the moments where they were trying to build up in the game, and there was a few times where City were on the back foot. But by and large, they found the answers. They kept control of the tie for pretty much all of the 90 minutes. Do you think that's fair? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. There wasn't a lot of scares. There wasn't a lot of open space to run into, and I might be drawing too big a conclusion as to why, but I do feel like, well, there wasn't any of those passes from the fullbacks and Rodri straight up the pitch to Haaland, and that's not the only thing that has kind of stopped City from having control, but they kind of, you know, when you rush it and get the ball from, well, as Guardiola always says, the quicker you, or as quick as you get the ball away, the quickly comes back, kind of thing. And we've seen that this season in certain games. You know, the Palace game in the first half, obviously they were rushing and they were very keen to get it back at 2-0, and they were playing really direct balls forward to Haaland that weren't going anywhere near him, and it didn't really suit anyone. And then after that, after half time, they kind of slowed down a bit, didn't have any of those. And, you know, obviously they ended up doing the things they needed to do and supplied Haaland to get a hat-trick. And last night, yeah, there weren't a lot of those long balls. It was all just kind of knitted together quite well. But I mean, that said, Sevilla aren't that good. So,
yeah,
there's definitely going to be a few factors. But yeah, I think finding that balancing act and that control is probably going to be the key to the season, isn't it?
Yeah,
if you can have the kind of control you had last season without a striker, this season with the most lethal striker around, then, you know,
should go all right. Yeah,
that is the challenge.
Yeah, Paul. I also wonder how much the fact that City scored early through Haaland, which they didn't do at Villa Park. You know, they had that chance where Walker blazed it over, where he could have squared it for Haaland, and he'd have probably scored. I wonder how much the impact of an early goal has helped City there. Just to mean that, you know, they don't have to keep trying to force the issue over the top, which they didn't have against Palace. They didn't have against Villa.
Yeah, it played a huge role, and not just the early goal, but the second goal. Because I think that Sevilla wasn't playing great, to be honest. I mean, Sevilla wasn't playing good. They played, like, really bad, if I'm honest. I think that they did the first shot in target, like, in the 80th minute of the game. But I think that when, like, the stadium was kind of, like, hoping to get, like, a new momentum, it's when just the second goal arrived, basically. I think that at Villa, City had chances enough to probably not get to the final stages of the game with just a margin of one goal. So that would have been an issue too. But yeah, I think, of course, just as much as the early goals come for City, I mean, this fact of this encouraging the opponents that they are playing with, it's gonna play a huge role on it.
Yeah. In terms of setup, though, Paul, is Grealish being back in there a factor, do you think?
I think that he was really good. really good. Like, you could see him like gliding past Jesus Navas quite a few times. I think he was good with his passing as well. I think that Pep has like quite a lot of hopes that he can have a good season. I think that he praised a lot Jack Grealish on the press conference after the game. And just in that regard of trying to have more control without a false nine, having a guy like Grealish who not is capable like to hold the ball and just to wait with it until the right passes just comes after him. I think it's going to be like a usual selection for Pep, in my opinion, to play with Grealish in the left wing.
Yeah, I wonder, Sam, if Grealish has become one of those players that you, again, you only notice the impact of when he's not there.
Yeah, you know, when Guardiola came after... In fact, I've still not bloody published that article yet, so... I wrote these words two weeks ago, but it was like... And obviously it was directly relevant to the Newcastle game, but it's like, if you... Like, how do you think City could have stopped Newcastle from having those counter-attacks? Oh, yeah. Maybe bring on Calvin Phillips to sit next to Rodri, which is what people wanted to do at halftime. Maybe you put Kyle Walker back to a more natural right-back position. You know, maybe you double up on Saint-Maximin, whatever. All those things. How many people would say, play Jack Grealish? Like, you just wouldn't, would you? Like,
is that did Guardiola say that?
Yeah, well, he was like, you know, if we break break the lines with the pass and we can run, then it's fine if we finish. But if we don't finish, then, you know, we've kind of attacked so quickly. The midfield aren't set. Because, you know, the whole thing about passing and slow build, well, not so much slow build up, but methodical build up with loads of passes is everyone's in the right position. So if you lose the ball, you're in the right position to go and counter press and get it back. But without that, if you go up the pitch quickly and you lose it, you're not in the right positions. All of a sudden, people are streaming past Rodri, one-on-one with Kyle Walker. And Guardiola said, you know, the only thing you can do in those situations is defend with Edison. Like, basically, like, the defense has got no chance. You just got to hope Edison makes a save, which, you know, is a conversation for another day. But he said, with Foden, Phil's always going, Haaland's always going. He goes, if you play with Grealish on the left, or Mahrez on the right, or Bernardo on the right, and Bernardo did play on the right, to be fair, he goes, they've got more passes, they slow the game down, and that's what they need. So, like, when people were saying Mahrez slowed the game down against Villa, fucking good. That's what he was supposed to do, because it's all about slowing the game down and having more passes, especially when you're 1-0 up. So yeah, in terms of Grealish, the impact of Grealish being more obvious when he's not there, I mean, you could say that, but I mean, let's not pretend that he's been as good as he should be.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, they're not missing his goals and assists when they're not there, because he doesn't really have it. But Guardiola wants him to have more goals and assists. Grealish wants him to have more goals and assists. And when they've got that, we can say more clearly, you know, you realise his value when he's not there. But there is definitely an element to that. And that is, if we're sitting wondering why City don't have control and they're playing, let's say, Foden and Haaland up front and Alvarez, let's say, that's why. You know, because they've got no one really there to slow down and play more passes. And Grealish is one of those types of players. So he definitely does bring that, for sure. And I'll publish that article at some point.
Yeah, just there's one thing about like the control that now we were mentioning. Now, I don't know why it came to my head right now, but after the game at Sevilla, Pep spoke, I think it was with the Spanish TV right holders, and he said something like that was quite interesting, like in regards of the fast breaks that they do sometimes, that they need to do more passes. He said that he feels that probably City is quite tempted to go on fast breaks because of they have Haaland up front, and he's such like a big weapon like on the counter-attack that sometimes they feel like tempted to do that, and that sometimes they have to learn to not rush too much and just to pass over the ball. But he ended up saying, because I think that the reporter re-asked him also, there's like a bad point in having, there's a bad side in having Haaland. And he said, no, I haven't said that. I just prefer to have Haaland. But we have to learn to read just the situations to have a better control of the games.
That's interesting, because when I sit there and I sit in my seat as a fan of the club, watching them, you know, pick up the ball just after the opposition have given it away, and Haaland's suddenly breaking, and you can see all that space. The temptation is there to go, look, just hit the space, and Haaland will kind of do the rest. And like, I had an old coach when I was a kid who always, like, when we used to play games in like five-a-side games, and you know, you'd play in a cage, like, he always used to say, take the shot on because it's coming back to you. because if you miss, then it hits the backboards and it's bouncing out into a dangerous area. But like City don't want that. They don't want the opposition to. They don't want a situation where they put a ball over the top. It doesn't quite make it. Suddenly, it's in the opposition goalkeeper's hands, and the opposition have it back. They can try and hit while City are not set for it. And it's a real interesting kind of dilemma, I guess, between what the fans want to see and what the fans kind of demand to see in this free-flowing attacking football that the players can provide, and actually what Guardiola sees will control the game and give City the best chance of winning it. And that's basically not to make it a basketball game. Am I reading that right, do you think?
Yeah, well, do you remember after the Chelsea game when City beat Chelsea 1-0 in January, and then there were a couple of chances to counter-attack with, like, it was one of those where the pitch was so open, it was almost like whoever was the runner, they were in their own half, so they couldn't have been offside. And I think, like, Foden tried to play one pass, and I think KDB tried to play the other one. And Guardiola said afterwards, he goes, I know we've got the emotion, we've got loads of people here, and they're willing us on to do it, but what we need to do is take the ball into the corner and do 1,000 million passes. Yeah. And it's all the same thing, isn't it? Like, yeah. it's just that. And you go back to, yeah, fans love City. And this is why I've talked before when people were talking about the boring debate. Now, obviously, I don't think watching City is boring, but I kind of know where people are coming from, because everybody wants to watch chaos, don't they? Everybody wants to watch end-to-end football. And if City played end-to-end all season with Haaland and Foden, to be fair, they'd still moan. They'd still say it's unfair because of Haaland or whatever. But I'm sure more neutrals would find pleasure in that, because that's more the type of game that anyone would want to watch. If we were given the option of like two generic teams playing, and we were told one's it's going to be like methodical and slow and a tactical battle, or like end to end, loads of goals, most people would go for the loads of goals. And obviously, that's the opposite of what Guardiola wants. To go back to that Chelsea example and the 1,000 million passes, and the Newcastle thing of we need to slow the game down, and the Villa thing of we need to slow the game down.
Yeah, just on Villa, Sam, because obviously you said Mahrez came on and slowed it down, and that was good.
Everyone was complaining that he slowed the game down. So good,
but they did kind of. It did feel like they were out of control after Villa had equalised, and I just wonder what they could have done to change that, because because Guardiola. I mean, he wasn't going to then suddenly make it a basketball game, and he wasn't going to change the momentum, because ultimately City should have been 2-3 goals up after they'd scored, and they just didn't take the chances. So he doesn't want to disrupt the momentum, I guess.
So the thing is, being at Villa Park at the weekend, I was thinking back to the final game of last season, obviously, and you just feel like, you must feel when you're like Tyrone Mings sticking your leg out to try and clear that ball, and then it just goes to De Bruyne. You must just feel that there's nothing you can do. Like, this momentum, there's nothing he can do. There was nothing Villa could do on the last game of last season to stop City winning. That momentum was just too much. And it was the same against Palace the other week when they turned it around. Pretty much the same against Newcastle, they did all right in the end, Newcastle, to get a point and not concede the fourth. But what made me think about momentum at Villa was, well, Villa have got the momentum now. The crowd were really, really loud. Villa were really attacking and getting bodies forward, and the crowd was behind them, and that does count for something. And it made me think there's certain things in football you just can't really avoid, and like momentum being one of them. Now, I'm sure tactically there were things City could have done, and I think they were still, I'm trying to remember now, it feels so long ago, the perils of doing a podcast two games later. I'm sure they were still being direct, and I think there is something you can do to stop that momentum, because you just keep the ball, don't you? Like, what momentum did West Ham have on the first game of the season? Absolutely nothing after the first 5 minutes, because City just kept the ball so well, and that is normally the answer. So, yeah, there's definitely the momentum in football, and it did feel like it was very difficult to turn that tide on Saturday, but I guess the answer would have been, just like we've said for the last 5 minutes, just 1,000 million passes.
Yeah.
Just keep it, like, just stop them running. Don't give them spaces. Be compact. And, if you kind of wrestle the game back and the control of the game back, then City can go and win it again. And when Villa did equalise, I was like, okay, well, presumably they'll drop back now and City can build their attacks, and they'll probably get another one. But it wasn't like that at all, was it? There was no consistent flow of the game. It was still very much end to end. And yeah, I'm sure more passes would have helped. But, mate, like I say, there was definitely a big momentum shift in the ground, and maybe there is nothing you can do about it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Paul, what about Rodri? Because I've seen a little bit of criticism that he's had a bit of a slow start to the season. And I wondered if that was a little bit of a kind of a reaction to the team performance at Villa Park. Because then when you kind of flip it to Seville, he was everywhere on that pitch against Seville.
Yeah. And I'm quite against the claims that he's had a slow start of the season. I think that he played.
He's been phenomenal apart from on Saturday.
He's been phenomenal apart of the last game. Yeah. So yeah, and against Sevilla, I mean, I think it was just another day at the office for him. I was watching the game, or I just saw the highlights through like the Spanish TV, and they were like all crazy and just praising how good Rodri is. Like in the Spanish TV, they were just saying that, well, I don't think there is a holding midfielder better for Pep Guardiola than this guy. And I think that they are quite right. I don't think, I just don't think that he has had a slow start of the season. And I think that when he doesn't play well, it's just like a matter of a collective thing. I wouldn't blame him at all. I think that in terms of form and physical condition, he's in a good moment. It's always nice to have a good reminder of what Rodri is capable of.
Yeah, cracking tan as well. I suddenly spotted that against Sevilla. That he, you know, he's still got the summer tan this long into the season. Doing a good job there.
Well, I
if he'd have been training in Sevilla, it'd have been all right. You should see mine.
I just think that Rodri is like able to be tanned like for the whole year.
I asked you that, didn't I? When we went to we were on the tram to the City game earlier in the year, I was like, "How does he do it?" And it was Alvaro as well, and Alvaro was like, "No, I think." You were both like, I just think, you know, it's a tiny bit of sun and it just tops him up.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Yeah. Let's touch on Gundogan as well, Sam, because he came. What do you think he could come back in against Spurs just simply because of, Spurs are not Aston Villa and they're not Sevilla. And that thing that Guardiola always talks about knowing when to arrive, it just seems like the perfect opportunity for him.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, don't get into what's going to happen tactically on Saturday. I've honestly no idea. Like in terms of like the back line, who it's going to be, you know, where is Cancelo going to be, on the right or on the left? I guess on the right. Who's going to be left back? And then obviously that has a knock on everywhere else, doesn't it? And then it's that thing, isn't it? Like, so maybe Grealish does play, but then does Foden play on the right? And then if Foden plays on the right, then presumably Haaland plays. And then it's going to be, De Bruyne, you'd imagine, and Rodri. And then it's Bernardo or Gundogan, and then it's like almost an impossible choice. And then I don't know what Guardiola's going to decide. Obviously against West Ham, it seemed perfect for that kind of arriving and playing off Haaland for Gundogan to do that. But, you know, if Bernardo drops deep to help progress the build-up, and means that, because I thought one of the things last night, so Pep said afterwards about Akanji that he can break the lines like Laporte, but he didn't do that once last night. And me and Paul were talking, and Paul rightly said, as I was thinking as well, as you know, it's his first game. You're not going to be trying too, mate, you're not necessarily going to be trying too much in terms of line breaking passes.
Yeah, you come in and have a solid game, don't you? Don't come in and go, right, I'm going to boss this now.
Yeah, exactly, which he did. I thought it was quite noticeable that with Diaz and Akanji last night, they didn't have to do too much. It was just Bernardo dropping deep. Okay, give it to him. He'll take it up the pitch. De Bruyne dropping deep. Give it to him. He'll take it up the pitch. So I don't know if they'll want Bernardo back there to do that, or if they want Gundogan to stay high up. Like, I, honestly, no idea. But I mean, again, you'd think control would be the watchword. You just don't want to be, you don't want to be giving the ball back to Spurs easily by, you know, Cancelo, Rodri or Walker when he was fit, just thinking, oh, Haaland's there, banging it towards him, going nowhere near, and then you're defending again. You won't want that against Spurs. I actually asked Guardiola about that after the game, and I mentioned specifically about those three being in deep areas and giving long balls over the top that didn't necessarily get next to him, and I was near to Haaland, and I said, "Is this like, is that a good thing? You know, is it a different option you've got now, or you know, is it a bit rushed? And you know, you're giving the ball away too easily." But he was like, "How many times did it happen?" He goes, "Once or twice." I was like, "Well, three or four," and I'm talking like per game or like per half. And he was like, "I guess I don't think much." But the thing is, it's definitely happened loads, hasn't it? Like if we're talking about the Palace game,
There was a massive difference between Palace first half and Palace
first
second
half. Second half, yeah. And it's like, you're telling me Guardiola doesn't know exactly how many of those passes were played. But then there wasn't any last night. So I am wondering if that's something they're going to try and rein in a bit. But the only thing I could say about the tactical approach, I don't know about who's going to be playing where, but just don't be that direct. And the thing with Haaland is, we don't need to force it. You don't need to give him loads of touches. Just give him the right touches and he'll score. So that's got to be the message, really.
Yeah. Paul, is there a situation brewing with Walker being injured? Because we don't know if he'll be back for Spurs at the weekend. It kind of means that...
No, he probably is out. Probably out of the international break.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, in that case, it almost certainly means that Cancelo will play on the right-hand side. So what did City do on the left-hand side? Because, I mean, Gomez against Sevilla was pretty good, but again, was Sevilla. Ake's got the experience, but isn't a left-back.
Yeah, I don't think Gomez is going to play against Tottenham. And then, assuming that, then you have two options, which are using John Stones, that you would have to, I don't know if force him or if he would be back in time, but you using John Stones as a right back or using Nathan Ake as a left back. I guess that's going to be the defense, plus with like the system that Tottenham plays, like the three guys up front. I mean, you need to be solid defensively just to contain them. I think that it's going to be on the bodies that Pep has at his disposal. But I think that Gomez, as much as he looks good and he looks comfortable with the ball on his feet and he can be a good addition to that team, you don't want to rush him too much and just put him like to play 90 minutes on the Tottenham game. On a game against Tottenham, so that's basically why I think that he's not going to start on the weekend.
Yeah, I'm interested though, because I mean, the three of us again at the start of the season, when talking about Walker coming inside, we're like, well, you possibly don't want Walker doing it against teams like Liverpool, and I would put Tottenham in that bracket as well. You wouldn't want them doing it.
Yeah.
I think we've established now there's a lot of teams you don't want it to happen against.
But Cancelo doing it though, Paul, it's different from the right hand side with him doing it, is it?
Yeah. Well, basically, with Cancelo playing there, it's like playing with an extra midfielder, basically. I mean, he has no issue at all just to dip inside. It's another story. The thing with Cancelo is that sometimes I have the feeling that or he has a great game or he has a really bad game. There's no like middle term with him.
It's like me in podcasts, either great or absolute rubbish.
Well, I didn't say that. But yeah, of course, it's like more natural for Cancelo. But yeah, I'm sure that Pep sees something in there that we don't see. Because like watching games with Sam on the press box, we fairly agreed that Walker wasn't like looking great on midfield. But then he just stuck with putting Kyle Walker in there. So, but yeah, I think in the coming games, maybe just because of the injury of Walker, now Cancelo is gonna have to play in that role and probably for the good. We'll see.
Yeah. Does a Kanji keep his place, do you think, Sam?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
But basically for the bodies that they have, right?
Yeah. And like, there's no... Unless there's a... Okay, Sevilla's one thing, Spurs is another situation, which we expect to happen with Gomez. He played well. And it's like, Ake left back, my best guess, which means sod all. But my best guess at the back four is Cancelo right back, Diaz and Akanji, and Ake left back. Oh, because I think Stones is out, and Walker's out, and Laporte's out. So I don't know what else you'd do. I mean, I'm sure there will be something, but I can't think of anything else. So I guess that will be it. So yeah, Akanji. Good luck to you, mate. it's different, you know. And I
there's a whole lot of narrative fans about this fixture, mate. You've got to, you're going to find out first time. Yeah.
Absolutely loads of it. And also, Son hasn't scored this season. It's been a big thing for Spurs, hasn't it? So that's a hat-trick at least. Haaland's going to need to get four, which, you know, he probably will.
Yeah, but the Son hat-trick will come with an expected goals of like 0.07, while Haaland will miss all of his chances despite being an expected goals of nearly 10. It's like, it's just how it works against Spurs.
Yeah. Be good. It'll be a good game. I'm looking forward to it. It's difficult. I mean, it's not difficult to know where City are this season, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like they're fully amazing. Like, they're very good and still like big favourites to win the league and the Champions League, as I wrote the other day. But it's, you know, it's not like they're beating Sevilla 4-0 every weekend, is it? Like those Villa and Newcastle results are a bit of a reminder that, oh, okay. And obviously Spurs being a proper test is like, okay, let's see where they are.
This is it. I got asked at work today. Do you think City have put a full 90 minutes together yet? And I think Sevilla's like the first one where they've actually done that. Bournemouth, Bournemouth as well, but like
Bournemouth as well, Forest as well,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, you start saying, "Oh, well, those three don't count because the opposition weren't very good, and you can't really do that."
And they've only played seven, eight.
Yeah, exactly. Seven games. And West Ham was great as well, really.
Yeah.
West Ham was absolutely fine. No problem at all. So, yeah. So there's four out of the seven, I would say.
Yeah, more than 50%. It's, we're doing all right though. Paul, what do you think Guardiola can do to kind of keep control of this game? Because, you know, there is a history of Son and Kane cutting through City's middle like a hot knife through butter. And I'm just wondering if, you know, if the watchword of this season has been, you know, how does City keep control of these games? This is a real test for them to do that. So what do you think Guardiola does to make sure that they don't succumb to the same old problems against Spurs?
That's a good question. And if I would know the exact answer, I would probably be working as a manager at Man City.
Be in the dugout.
And just earning like loads of money. But I wouldn't be surprised if one of Bernardo Silva or Gundogan go deeper and just play alongside Rodri. I think that you don't want to risk any kind of ball loss in the build-up against those teams. But basically, Tottenham is going to live for any ball that City is going to lose in transition. So I wouldn't be surprised if Pep just puts an extra midfielder alongside Rodri. And just from there start like orchestrating all the attack. I think that just having the ball in that position and just putting another man just close to Harry Kane in the zone where Harry Kane tends to drop, I think that can be a good solution, in my opinion. But again, I'm not that good at Guardiola.
The weird thing about Kane dropping off in the game in, when was it, February? Diaz has never went with him. And like, Diaz is the most aggressive, go with the man who drops off and kick him in the back defender I can think of.
I seem to remember him last season doing it like sometimes as high as the opposition, like 18 yards.
Well, I remember against Southampton, he was doing it, like after set pieces and stuff. In fact, it wasn't always set pieces. Sometimes it was kind of open for play or just after throw-ins or whatever. But yeah, he was doing it around 18, 20 yards out. Like he's the most aggressive centre back that I can think of, which is probably because I watch about four non-City games a year. But it was a bit strange that he hadn't done that.
Yeah, but then if you want one centre back just to follow Kane wherever he drops, you need two more centre backs to stay back.
Yeah, for sure.
Tottenham is going to play with Son and Kulusevski or Son and Richarlison. So
yeah, but back at that time they had Kane. Sorry, they had Kane. They had Walker. I don't know who the other centre back was. I can't remember. But
I mean, it's going to make more sense if you play like with three centre backs and Nathan Ake, let's say, as a left back.
So you've still got Stones and Ake, yeah.
Yeah, just to allow like the extra centre back just to follow Kane.
Well, Akanji and Ake, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
Let's kind of turn our attention to the other end of the pitch, because I want to address this thought that Phil Foden's had a slow start to the season and has struggled, because Guardiola singled him out for praise after the Sevilla game. He got kicked up and down that right flank. He felt like a performance to kind of kickstart his season. Do you think that's fair, Sam?
Well, yeah, but I mean, just have to point everyone in the direction of what Guardiola said, and he was fairly brutal by kind of Guardiola standards in terms of individual performances. I can't remember the wording, but it was basically he's not had a great start to the season.
Yeah,
and now he was good, so brilliant. So yeah, he'd said that Foden hadn't started brilliantly. I think Foden's one of those players, not quite full Sane on the Sane spectrum, but you know, we go into press conferences saying, oh, Phil's great, isn't he? I think Guardiola's always going to say he needs to do this and he needs to do that, because he knows he's great, but there's always extra stuff he wants him to do. Whereas, you know, when it's Bernardo, it's just, oh, we love him and he's amazing, And with De Bruyne, it's pretty much the same. But there's, you know, there's always that crop of players where it's, oh, he can do a bit more. And Foden's one of them. So I suppose it's not really a surprise that he said that last night. But it was fairly honest for Guardiola standards, because, you know, normally he's a I'll protect you in the press conference and tell you privately kind of guy. Obviously, the thing with Foden is not so much the performances. I know people were critical after the weekend, but the big talking point about Foden early in the season was those non-passes to Haaland, wasn't it? And then he got a couple of assists for Haaland, and then he didn't play especially well at Villa, but kind of in that way that we're talking about having to slow the game down and Grealish not playing. And I wrote that article on kind of the process of Foden becoming more like Silva in terms of not just always running forwards. And I'm convinced that on the training ground over the last few weeks, there has been work done with Foden to kind of be like, okay, look, if you're in these positions, you don't always have to take the man on, come back inside, help us stir the game down. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he was trying to do at the weekend. And again, fans don't like it, but Guardiola's telling him what to do. I don't know if that's the case in this specific case, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, it's that Manchester Derby conversation from last season, isn't it? Where it
Was it
Wan-Bissaka?
Everyone wants you to go and win 8-0. But Guardiola just wants more passes. And yeah, the other one within that is everyone wants Foden to run Wan-Bissaka absolutely ragged. But no, you just stay wide and give the ball back inside when you get it. That's the plan.
How much of the criticism, Paul, do you think is simply people were a bit annoyed that he didn't pass to Haaland in the first couple of games?
Could be because we are in this point where if you don't pass the ball to the main guy, or if you don't score like two goals per game, you're having like a bad streak. It could be that way. I mean, it's hard to believe because for them probably if you have to imagine one player that is being loved by the City fan base, it has to be Phil Foden, and he has all the rights to be. Maybe it happened because of not squaring the ball to Haaland. But I think that the more time that it passes, the more that people is going to forget about that, because Phil is going to score and it's going to see small times this season, basically.
Yeah. Quick word on Calvin Phillips. There was a nice little cameo from him on Tuesday night. I was a little worried, Paul, that he was going to end up being one of those signings that, you know, that comes in and ends up barely playing. But it's nice that he's getting a little bit more involved now that he's fit again. And I guess it's good that Rodri had some time to come off towards the end, because you can't just run him into the ground for the entire season.
Yeah, I think that the biggest enemy that he has are the injuries, basically. Because all the games that he's missed has been because of injury. I'm sure that Pep would have given like him more minutes in games that they were already resolved. Just to let him like keep learning all the process that means becoming like number six at Manchester City. But yeah, I think that he has everything. He's quite calm. That I think that I can see him like scanning a lot before like getting the ball, which is a good sign. I think that he's doing now it more than what he was doing it like at the start of the season or in pre-season. It was a good cameo, as you were saying. And yeah, I think that with the five subs, he's going to play like a lot of Premier League games, in my opinion. Especially because Pep knows that the only way to learn that role in the team is just to play and just to have more minutes.
Yeah, and I guess it's hard, Sam, that's that position in a Guardiola team, because we saw when Rodri came in, you know, facing those transitions, if you are not in a position to be able to cut them out, or if the team at the top end of the pitch is not helping you out with stopping them, it's a very, very difficult place to be, isn't it?
Well, if he'd played against... If, let's say he made his debut against Newcastle, people would be saying he was shy. Because it's exactly how you say, like, yeah, if you're not all set up, you're not all in the right positions, and all the forwards ahead of you, not even losing the ball. In that one occasion we talked about against Newcastle, where Haaland kind of bounced off Fabian Scher and
hit the post. Yeah,
Pope tipped onto the post, which was great play. And all of a sudden they were counter attacking, and everyone was getting bypassed. Yeah, it's horrible. Like Guardiola says, never mind the defense; you're defending with Edison. So yeah, it goes for the midfielders as well. Poor old Rodri had that horrible season of bedding in when they knew he needed to do all those things defensively better. And But they thought, well, okay, he's got time to bed in and alternate with Fernandinho. All of a sudden, Fernandinho's at centre back, mate. You need to protect him. Oh, we're not pressing that. We're not pressing as much either. So all the best. So it's exactly the same, and hopefully for Phillips and for City's sake, that you know he won't have those kind of problems to deal with, and he can slot in. As you were saying, you know, once the game's done, because a couple of times, or at least once anyway, Rodri's been the first sub off as soon as the game's done. So, but now Phillips is fit. If he can be the first one on, then brilliant.
Yeah. Do you think he'll play a lot more than... Because there was criticism of the transfer initially from outside of people who would say, well, why would you want to go and sit on City's bench? And I could see immediately how the narrative was going to develop from there, because he wasn't going to play as many games as he would have done at Leeds. And then you know how the story goes from there. And I just wondered, like, is he going to play more games than I feared he would, if that makes sense?
I think when he signed, I remember writing, you know, his job or his hope really to play more than 30 games, because I think was it Zinchenko and Fernandinho, possibly another, but those two, they didn't play more than 30 games last season, and Ake, the other one. So yeah, if you do end up in that role, then it's difficult, but that's it, isn't it? Rodri is amazing and he can play a lot of games, so I suppose in terms of fear of Phillips playing games, I suppose the fear is anything happening to Rodri, because if you get to the end of the season and Rodri's played 90% of the games, then that's probably a good outcome, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, League Cup games, the thing is there's no like easy League Cup game, is there? It's Chelsea. But it's one of those, isn't it, where if City can qualify from the Champions League group after like four games or something, then you could put him in for a couple there and League Cup, and you know, the game's over Christmas. Well, the Christmas calendar is different, obviously, because of the World Cup. But yeah, there'll be opportunities, won't there? Everyone's talking about the World Cup making things difficult. So there will be opportunities. But in terms of playing more than expected, hopefully not, because hopefully Rodri's fine.
Yeah, just in terms of getting him up to speed as well, though. That's the that's the thing, isn't it? A couple of things to kind of finish on now. I'm interested to kind of get your thoughts, because obviously Spurs is a fixture that fills me with dread and fills a lot of City fans with dread, just given recent history and how they've played out. If all goes to plan and you know and the game plan works, City should come away with 3 points on Saturday. But we know it doesn't always work like that. Where should City be, do you think, by the time that we break up for the World Cup? Because just looking at the run of games, I've got the fixtures up here. Before the World Cup, it's Spurs at home, Wolves away, United at home, Southampton at home, Liverpool away, Arsenal away, Brighton at home, Leicester away, Fulham at home, Brentford at home. There's a maximum there of 30 more points before the World Cup. Six of the games are at home, four of them are away from home, and they're currently a point off the top of the table. Like, how do you see this kind of this run into the pause going, Paul? Because there's a couple of games in there that I look at and think that's not going to be easy.
Yeah, I think it's not going to be easy, but I also think that City and the squad is going to probably see it and assess it like that. Now, like, the main rivals are not like on their best shape. And now is the moment where probably you fuel yourself by watching like the opponents like not winning enough games, or just seeing Chelsea with Tuchel, seeing Liverpool that is not doing great tonight at the Champions League. So that can play a part as well. I think that's something that can keep the team like motivated and stuff. But yeah, apart from that, like the fixtures are not easy. I mean, if you want me like to make a forecast of points, I'm just really bad at that. But I think
it's okay. I've got a better forecast for you to finish the show on, so don't worry about that.
Oh, there you go then. Yeah, but I don't think City will lose a lot of points, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
for the World Cup.
I thought if I was answering that, I was going to say I think they'll be top. Well, they should be.
Yeah,
I don't see why not.
The thing that concerns me a little bit, Sam, is that the position of the World Cup is when City hit their stride. So they kind of need to hit the stride a bit earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very true. Yeah, quite possibly. Although, like Paul's saying, no one else is really hitting their stride either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said earlier, I'm not quite sure their level, but that's either, are they excellent or are they a bit less than excellent? Like, is it going to be a tighter race of 80 points? Or is it going to be City winning the title with like 95?
Yeah.
That's my only doubt. Like, maybe they'll be terrible, but my only doubt is it going to be, are they going to be closer to the pack, or are they just going to blitz it again? Yeah. I'd guess the blitz as well, but with the World Cup element, we don't really know. But yeah, those fixtures before the World Cup and how they're playing so far and the kind of games they've got. Okay, some of the games are difficult, but a lot.
Mind you, I add Brighton down as a difficult one, which might not be the case if Potter has signed for Chelsea by the time people hear this. So
that would help.
It would help. Let's finish on the goal bots, because you're only going to look bad on this one, you two, so let's have a number. Haaland's got 12 goals in 7 games, because we don't count the Community Shield, I'm afraid, Paul. He's only failed to score in one of the 7 that he's played in. So, from each of you, how many goals across all competitions do you think he'll score this season?
I'm going to say we have to be a specific, right? I'm
gonna I'll give you leeway, so like, I'll give you closest, but yeah,
41.
There you go, Sam. You can go higher or lower.
Yeah, I'll just give my kind of ideas, because what we're doing in the next couple of days is we're doing like a tracker for Haaland against like the highest goal scoring domestic goal scoring campaigns in history. So there's like a few Messi ones when he got 50, and like Ronaldo when he got 48, and Messi when he got like 43, and there's Lewandowski when he got 41 a couple of years ago, and there's two people from the French league in 1970-71 when they got 44 and 42, which is mental. I never knew that was a thing. But
imagine not getting the golden boot with 42 because somebody else
mad. I had to kind of write the words for them. So I was looking on, you know, basically the transfer marked list of like Messi and Ronaldo, and like of the 35 games they played in or whatever. There was one season where Messi only didn't score in 5 league games, and it was like 1-2-2-3-3-2-4-1-2, like just in terms of the amount of goals. And it's like, okay, so Haaland could break 32, the Premier League goal record. Easy. But if you want to go and get 40, 50 in the Premier League, you need to be getting like 6 hat-tricks. But he's already got 2.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and all competitions as well. Let's say he doesn't play much in the FA Cup, because let's say the first couple of rounds are against teams where they rest him. So the Champions League, he's going to get about 100. If he's fit, 50 in all competitions.
Oof, what a shout. Yes. Finally, like that Messi one, Sam, you can go first on this one. How many games, including the Bournemouth one, which is his only one so far, will he feature in that he fails to score in? Will it be single figures?
Like I say, there were some Messi and Ronaldo ones where they didn't score in like 10 or 11 league games, but they still got like 40-odd because they were just getting hat-tricks and 4s all the time. League games, do you say?
I left this one open, so let's say league games. It's probably easiest.
I'm going to say 10.
Yeah. Any bid less than 10?
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, I think it's going to be less than 10.
Because in Sam's situation, he scored in 28, yeah.
If he plays, right? Because if Julian Alvarez plays and he doesn't even feature, I mean, that doesn't count, right?
I don't know.
If he starts and doesn't score, not if he's on the bench.
Yeah. How many games will he feature in that he fails to score in?
Jesus. How we ended up in this? less than 10 for sure.
Nice and specific. Right?
But I can get on board with the big shouts because he's unbelievable, isn't he? The article I wrote, he's a goal scoring machine in City, a chance creation machine. So like, what do you expect?
Yeah, exactly that. Right, well, that's the end of this week's Why Always Us. Thanks, as ever, to Sam Lee.
Thank you very much.
And to Paul Byers.
Thanks, lads.
Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.